truthfully, what happens is, as children grow up, we start to educate them progressively from the waist up. And then we focus on their heads, and slightly to one side.
I think in the old days, you know, you were better off. Because nowadays, they're all specialists. Everyone's becoming better and better, and less and less. And eventually, someone's going to be superb at nothing.
Our education system has mined our minds in the way that we've strip-mined the earth for a particular commodity. And for the future, it won't serve us. We have to rethink the fundamental principles on which we're educating our children.
We're not here to tell everybody that they're wrong and we're right. We're not saying that we have all the answers, but we'd like to present a different way of looking at it.
Okay, so we're back with Leo Chin. And we're going to be continuing this series, looking at Chin's upcoming interview for becoming a professional teacher of the Chinese language overseas. Chin, welcome back to the studio.
Thank you.
Well, you teach Chinese abroad. We don't at the moment, but for the sake of this question, your students ask you why Chinese call them Laowai. As a teacher, how do you answer his question? So I think many foreigners who come to China can be a bit surprised at first when you're walking down the street, they go, Laowai, Laowai.
What I really want to say is, because even though we are same age, but you look, Westerners look much, much older than Chinese, but it's kidding. Just like once someone asked my husband, Why Chinese call us Gui Mei or Gui Lao? My husband told him, because for Chinese, what you look like really a little bit like the image of ghost in Chinese. That is why. But it's kidding. As for this one, I think we Chinese say Lao Wai, just like we say Lao Li, Lao Zhang, Lao Wang. Yeah, we use a Lao before your name. It shows them they are very friendly and it's very easy to call. Yeah, it's easy to call. And Lao means, meaning there.
What does Lao Wai mean if you put those two characters together?
Why means you are from outside of the China, the people from outside of China. Now means, you know, we Chinese, we also call Lao Wang, Lao Zhang.
What would that mean? It's like a mark of...
It's like just people just call like that because...
But would you call a Chinese person? Like?
Yeah, we call Chinese person. We call Chinese person. If my father, my father name is Liu, they call him Lao Liu. Lao Liu. Lao means old. Lao means old, but put it there. Lao Liu. It means, it's just friendly, you know, friendly. And make it shorter. Just like they do not call you Christopher. They call you Chris. You have a shorter name for people to call.
Yeah, so it's just an informal term.
Yeah, informal term, yeah.
For foreigner. Mm. But again, I feel this comes from the fact that, you know, Chinese culture is quite homogeneous. What I mean by that is, you know, the gene pool is very similar. Mm. So, you know, growing up in China, you, and especially the history over the last 100 years, Chinese people haven't had much interaction with people from other places that aren't homogeneous and that look different. So it would be natural to, when you see people that you've not really seen before, who are different, to have a label for them. Of course, in the West, you know, if you came to England, you certainly, as a Chinese person, wouldn't walk down the street and, you know, we'd go...
What do you
we'd
call
go, Asian Chinese? Person or Chinese person, you know. And as a child, I think if you shouted out, Chinese person, and pointed at them like we experience in China, the parents would obviously apologise to say that you can't say that, that's rude. But again, different cultures.
Yeah.
And I think it really does come from that You know, the fact that China's young in its days of, of having so many different, you know, heterogeneous society, cosmopolitan societies. I think it would probably happen less in the big cities in China, I think for sure, because there's just more of a norm of having experience of other races around you in your environment. And I think, again, like most things, like we were talking earlier about privacy and the way Chinese people no longer ask you how much you earn every month. As time goes on and China opens up, more foreigners interact with Chinese people, these questions, you know, children going along on the street going, Laowei, Laowei, is going to become less and less. I'm just absolutely sure of it. Would you disagree with that? Looks like you would.
Yes, but, you know, when we call Laowei, I don't think there's an insult.
Oh, absolutely not. No, you're absolutely not. No, you're absolutely right. It's like asking how much do you earn.
Yeah.
You're not. It's not an insult. You're not trying to offend them.
Yeah.
As is, oh, you look very fat. You know, it's absolutely not.
Yeah.
But from the perspective of the foreigner, I can see where it can be sound offensive, but it's not. And that's why it's really interesting to talk about these things, because you see both sides of the story.
Yeah.
But again, yes, when that child points up and goes, Laowei, Laowei, they're not being offensive. You know, we know that.
Yeah, they are quite curiosity.
They're curious, and it comes...
Yeah.
And would you agree it comes from the fact that person who's a Laowei has been labelled as a Laowei has come from the very fact that, you know, they are the minority.
Mm.
You know, it's not normal to see them around.
Yes.
You know, in England, it's very cosmopolitan. We have, you know, it's multiracial, completely. So it's very normal to see people from China, from India, from all over the world on our streets in England. So therefore, it's normal. There is no need to have a label, or especially to see someone. Because there must be a curiosity for a young child.
It's also a general name for all those peoples from outside of China.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Outside of China.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, well, I mean, we have people that would look like they're outside of England, in England, but they're not foreigners. They're English. They're British.
Yeah.
So then that just doesn't happen in China really at the moment from the history.
Yes.
So okay, interesting stuff there. So you would suggest then again, it's a cultural thing, and you would mention what we've talked about. Yeah. It's not offensive. It's not meant to be rude.
Yeah.
It's just embedded again in the culture.
Yeah.
We're different. We look different.
Yeah.
Okay. And the idea of white ghost, that comes from the, is it the Cantonese explanation where you say white ghost?
White ghost.
How would you say that in Chinese, white ghost?
Gui lao.
Yeah, it's the gui lao.
Gui lao.
So, and that's, is that Cantonese?
Yeah.
Yeah, gui lao. Which means white ghost.
Cantonese, people call like this.
Yeah. But of course, again, you can understand it comes from, you know, when a white person came to China first time and a Chinese person looked around and they saw someone with his white skin, they probably thought it was a ghost.
Yeah. And also the eyes is...
Yeah. Big eyes like a ghost, yeah?
No, the eyes color is quite different, really. Yeah.
Yeah. Very interesting stuff there. The world really does have a lot of growing up to do. I really do feel when we talk about this. We've all got to get to know each other a little bit more and connect. Yes, it's quite amazing, really, that we have all this. We're so urbanized and globalization, all this great technology we apparently have, but still we're so far removed from really truly understanding different cultures and accepting different cultures.
Yes.
And it's really quite sad, actually, that we're still, I think, very kind of primitive in the way we are with our human brothers and sisters. I think we all need to grow up, especially myself. A teacher is teaching students Chinese in Southeast Asia. The school uses local Chinese textbooks. The teacher feels it's very difficult and wants to change, but the students do not agree. What do you do? So you're teaching students in Southeast Asia. The school uses local Chinese textbooks. The teacher feels it's very difficult and wants to change, but the students do not agree. What do you do? I guess you're teaching Chinese students in Southeast Asia, or you're teaching Chinese to non-Chinese students in Southeast Asia?
Non-Chinese.
Yeah, of course. Okay. What would you do there then?
If the students like the textbook, I will use the textbook. But why the teacher feel it's difficult to teach? Maybe there's some reason there. It's because textbook is not good enough, but sometimes you can't decide everything. If you really want to change that, communicate with the students and give them better textbook to show them. Yeah, after the comparison, maybe they feel, oh, we have better one. Why do we stick to the old one? Yeah, there's a better one. Why don't we use a better one?
Yeah, I like that.
Yeah.
Because we can get very stuck in our ways, can't we?
Yeah.
You just get used to something. And then when someone wants to change it, it's like, oh, no, I'm happy with this.
Yeah.
Even though it might actually not be really effectively improving their Chinese language skills. So, yeah, good one. Well, you're off to Africa now, Chin. In Africa, a Chinese textbook is the traditional one. But you want to use simplified Chinese to teach. So obviously we're talking about writing here, the hands of the characters. But your students don't agree with you. They adhere to the traditional Chinese textbook. What's your suggestion? Ooh,
yeah, this
a good question.
From my point of view, who doesn't like simplified Chinese?
Right.
Who really like traditional Chinese? It's too complicated.
Well, hang on, let's talk about
too
that. So probably people in Taiwan, people
in Hong Kong. And also in Singapore.
Right.
Yeah.
So there's quite a few people that...
Yeah, they use traditional Chinese character. Maybe it's because the students in Africa, they want to go these three of the places. They want to learn traditional Chinese, but it's so difficult, right?
Why do you think people, you know, like we've just said, want to keep the traditional, should we say, more complicated Chinese? What's the reason behind that, do you think?
I tell you why. Before 1949, people are all use traditional Chinese character. After 1949... you know, the Communist Party take over China,
which is still, of course,
the government
in power today.
Yeah. But they didn't control Taiwan, Hong Kong, and Singapore.
Mm.
Yeah, those rest of the place, they are still use the traditional one. They didn't change, but. I think this is the best thing Chinese Communist Party to do for the people. Because
there
really,
you go.
Really, why? Because, you know, it's quite hard for people to learn Chinese.
Yeah.
There's a lot of people, they don't know how to write, how to read, they just know how to speak and listening, because those characters are too difficult.
Mm.
So they ask some language specialist to make those characters simplify those characters. And when I was young, I feel, even those simplified Chinese character, it is your struggle to learn how to write and read. But if it is traditional one, you will take more time. You will struggle more, really.
Yeah, and also, it's not just the first time that Chinese characters have gone through an evolutionary process. It's not just 1949. It's happened over thousands of years. Characters have changed, yeah? So it's not just a one-time... the one-off thing. I certainly learned that from learning Chinese characters. You know, you have your Bronze Age, your Oracle Bones, where they were written on there. They've changed as the time's gone on.
Yeah.
So it's a natural...
the character involved, but the after Han Dynasty, the character almost remain the same
until 1949.
Yeah. Even though the pronunciation change or but the character most of them remain the same. So simplify this. So make people easy to learn Chinese, easy to write, easy to learn. Yeah.
Some would say maybe dumbing down the population to a lower level. Here's something a little easier for you to learn. That's okay. You don't need to learn more complicated things. There is a feeling there. And again, the overriding, maybe this kind of understanding of an anti-establishment, post 1949, we keep our roots still in our traditional characters before it happened, before the 1949 came, kind of anti-establishment possible feeling there, I get from what you've said. But you're right, it certainly is a lot more complicated, anyone who knows a bit about Chinese language. So again, in this respect to the African students, they want to adhere to the traditional one. You'd obviously like them to do the simplified one. So you would suggest what?
Suggest to them, if you do not go to study or work in Hong Kong, Taiwan or Singapore, or try to learn simplify Chinese textbook. I show them it's much easier. Maybe you will spend two days to learn to remember a character, but the traditional one, maybe you will spend more time. And also when you write, you spend you can write faster and easy for you to read. Show them.
So find out what's the reasons behind it.
And also the mainland China, they all use traditional, simplify Chinese. They are small population, you simplify Chinese.
Before we move on, a person in Hong Kong who writes in traditional Chinese, would he or she be able to understand simplified Chinese, or they still need to learn? Because some of them, they are they try to be similar, but some of them are quite different. They're a lot more abstract.
They will learn, but it will not take too long to learn. A little bit time.
Okay.
Like I will learn traditional Chinese because all those classical Chinese they are.
They're traditional
Chinese characters.
Well, there you go. See, that's another advantage then for these African students maybe wanting that. You do get a further insight into Chinese history. So it's a tough question that I really think. I think you've got to really ask them, what's their goals? Why do they want to not use the simplified one? And as a teacher, I think if the students want to do traditional, to learn more about your culture, I think that's a wonderful thing. Eh?
But also, right now, the new edition of those classical books, they are all used simplified.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah, simplified. So, okay. Chinese.
Wonderful. Interesting topic, that, for sure. Okay. Some students, another question now, said that China has serious environmental pollution. Air pollution has made Chinese lifespans shorter. How do you explain this problem to the students?
I will tell them the environmental pollution is indeed serious in China. Because of the modernization, because there are a lot of goods made in China, there are a lot of factories. Also, China, especially in those 10 years, every city, they build new buildings everywhere. And but since are changing right now, because our President Xi right now, he pay much more attention on environment problems and try and there are a lot of strategies and also a lot of policy to change the environmental pollution. It's even right now the Beijing, the air of Beijing is much better than last year.
It's a work in progress, as they say, isn't it?
Ibu ibu lai.
Yeah.
Step by step. I mean, today we look at our studio, it's beautiful sky, isn't it?
Yeah.
Real blue sky as well.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, step by step, definitely working on it.
Yeah.
And long may it continue. Great. There's certainly a lot more awareness about this now than perhaps in the old days of the Industrial Revolution in Europe, where you couldn't see the road in London because it was so full of crap.
Because the government have done something, that's why you can see the change. If we do not done something, maybe the air pollution is still very serious, but right now much better.
Okay, so this question, this touches on something I think we've touched upon before. Some students argued that Chinese people like Western festivals more than actual Chinese festivals now, such as Christmas. What do you think about that? So, Chinese people liking Western festivals more than traditional Chinese festivals. What do you think about that? We touched on this, didn't we? Because there's a big thing at the moment, social media, about maybe the debate of whether Christmas should be banned in China. I think banned is quite something, but you know, in China, there's a lot of things that are banned and not allowed, so to speak. So it's a shame, really, because most of the toys in China, 95% of toys, apparently, we did this in a previous episode, are made in China.
Yes.
So Santa Claus, Father Christmas, has subcontracted his elves' workshops to China. And it's a shame because Santa Claus would probably find it a lot easier to deliver presents to Chinese students, Chinese children, shall I say, and mums and dads, if they've been good, because it's right here. You know, he doesn't have to travel very far. Mm. All the toys are made here, so it's just a quick delivery.
Yes.
But it looks like this might not happen. What do you feel about this, Chin? All seems a little bit S-I-L-L-Y.
Because China is opening up,
the
Western culture coming, and also the people, especially the youth, feel it's quite fresh. It's quite interesting.
Mm.
Yeah, they enjoying another festival. Yeah, if there's a extra festival, why not? Why don't they enjoy it? And also because those because of the commercial, there's a lot of. Lot of shops, they do business, they want to make the environment more attractive for people. Yeah, the decoration of the Christmas, you really can attract more people to come to their...
Yeah, more money.
Yeah, shop or to their stores. Yeah, this is also another reason.
In Chinese New Year, though, Spring Festival, does that happen? Shops, of course, everything closes, doesn't it, in Chinese New Year?
But actually...
You're missing out on making more money.
But actually, in traditional, the biggest Chinese festival, Spring Festival, all shops close.
Yeah.
Because it's family time for them, maybe family reunite. Yeah.
Used to be like that in Christmas Day. Even now in England now, since I was a kid, shops are open on, you know, over Christmas. And it used to be, you know, not much was open at all. Mm. Which is kind of nice in a way, to get that commercialism away for at least a few hours. Mm. But, I mean, are you open to this, you know, to have other festivals? As long as you keep the Chinese one, surely.
I think as Chinese, it should, because China have already opened to the outside of the world. If you want to do business around the world, you can't say, oh no, we will do business with you, but we do not want you, your festival. If, for example, if we... if in a Western country, there are a lot of Chinese people there, people say, oh no, there are some of the people celebrate Spring Festival, except Chinese, there are some local people also celebrate this. They say, oh no Spring Festival. I don't think Chinese people will feel good. So, if Chinese people really want Chinese like their traditional festival, they need focus on it. They need spend more time. They need keep those tradition very well. Yeah, if you want keep traditional one. You got to spend more time on it, got to celebrate it.
Yeah. I mean, the Hongbao giving, the red envelopes at Chinese New Year, a lot of young kids get red envelopes with money in.
Yeah.
I just want to ask a question on that. Do you ever put the name of the child on it? Do you ever label it? Like, you know, when you give a card to someone or a gift, you put to Liu Qin or to Chris. In China, are they always kind of, you know, not just a red envelope?
No.
Yeah, so...
I see them, some of them, but most of them do not.
So the thing is, that's the problem. So, because I found a red envelope down the side of my sofa the other day, and there was 200 RMB in it, and I was like, well, who's this for? It had no name on it. So I thought it must have been for me. Anyway, moving on. I think that's a good idea. You don't want to be labelling red envelopes. How silly. How personalised, how thoughtful. Moving on to the next question then, I don't want to bore people. In a New Year party at the Confucius Institute in UK, in the United Kingdom, it is appropriate to give a dragon paper cut to the guests, or shall I say, is it appropriate? So in a New Year party at the Confucius Institute in British, which I guess it must mean in Britain, is it appropriate to give a dragon paper cut to your guests?
It's also a culture difference. Because in China, dragon is the best. It's a symbolic thing. In China, dragon is... means power, prosperity, everything, rich, you know, only emperor can use dragon for themselves, not the ordinary people, only royal family can use dragon, in ancient time.
Or the cat, perhaps. Yeah. So, is it appropriate then to give a dragon paper cut or not?
No, because I know in Western culture, dragon is like something like evil. Yeah, dragon is it's evil. Am I right?
Yeah, perhaps. I mean, again, I think if a Chinese friend gave me a nice paper cut of a dragon at New Year's party, I would take it as a symbolism of a piece of Chinese culture. I wouldn't look too much into it. Is it appropriate by the basis of what you said, better to give them maybe a red envelope or something like that? Just remember to put the name on it. Or not, that's up to you. Let's move on from that question. The teacher who does not understand Thai in Thailand teaches Chinese. The students have a conversation in their own language in his lecture. What is your opinion? So this is about, you know, the local students talking in their local language. Yeah. Is it allowed? We've kind of touched upon this, right? I mean, it can be allowed, I think, at some times to express themselves around the language they're learning, right?
Yeah. Except you have Chinese only policy, right? We have already discussed.
Well, that depends. That's up to you, isn't it? As a teacher.
Yeah.
Would yours be a Chinese-only policy all the time? I got the feeling it could be sometimes...
In the lecture. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, of course. In your class, Chinese-only,
So you wouldn't allow them to talk in their native language then?
But sometimes you can't be that strict.
So you would allow them then sometimes?
Yeah.
You seem to be changing positions on this, like a ping pong ball.
Yeah. Actually, Chinese only policy is good, but sometimes they will use their own language to talk. You can't say, oh, no. You can't say, no, only Chinese to them directly, right?
I mean, you know, to have some rules that you come up with and procedures where there are, the students know when they're allowed they can use their native language and they know when they can't, again, to be nicely managed by the teacher is a good suggestion. You know, I think to just have a complete only Chinese scenario is, I understand it, but we've talked about this before. I feel we're at maybe a little bit of different edges here of our beliefs and how this can be used. And I certainly don't have all the answers, but I would say a little bit of balance there, whereas you'd say 100% only Chinese. But if they do speak a little bit of their native language, you'll let it go. I get that feeling that's what you'd be like. Would I be right?
Yeah.
That's where you stand on this?
Yeah.
Okay. Cripes. Hopefully you won't get into power. Okay. only joking. You'd keep Christmas, wouldn't you? Would you get rid of Christmas or would you keep it? You're thinking about this.
Yes, it's quite hard.
Okay, well, let's move on. I don't want you to appear a complete toe rag. No, I'm sure you would keep Christmas, Chin, wouldn't you? Just a Hongbao Christmas. Just red for Father Christmas. In an American high school class, you're in America now, there are students who fell in love and kiss with each other in your class. This action affects the class. How do you deal with it? So an American high school student, teacher, teaching Chinese and to students, and some of them are kissing, and it's affecting the class. How do you deal with it?
It's abruptive behavior, right?
Abruptive.
Yeah.
It's certainly... loving, maybe over-the-top behavior,
Maybe I walk to them, say, you two love with each other. I'm very happy.
Yeah.
But, don't kiss in the classroom, respect to other students, right?
Please do it outside of the classroom.
Yeah.
Yeah?
If they do not listen or this happened often, maybe I need to talk to them after class.
Yeah,
and
agree.
Also, I will ask some other colleagues, do those students do this in their classroom, in their class? Yeah.
Yeah.
What's their strategy?
Okay.
Yeah.
I think that's a good answer, Chin. The teacher, or you as a teacher, are teaching the students the word alcohol. Okay? The parents responded to the school and asked the teacher to apologize. What's your opinion? So you were teaching about the word alcohol. The parents responded and asked you to apologize for teaching them these words. What's your opinion on that?
It's related to communication with parents, right? You got to explain them. It's just teaching Chinese and let them know it's just the words. You're not mean to let them drink alcohol.
Exactly,
explain to the parents.
And apologize if you may have offended them in any way.
Apologize to them if he feel he was offended by this.
Yeah, you're teaching. Yeah. Okay. Well, I think that's a good answer there as well. Chin Liu, this has been a wonderful, I think, probably quite a few hours of talking to and fro about education. And culture in the
culture
West
and
in China. I think there's some really nice anecdotes and things to take from this. Hopefully the listeners would also agree, but I think we'll just put it out there, warts and all, as they say, because I do think there's some bits of gems in it. Especially in the stuff that you talk about. Definitely not what I talk about. So anyway, we will bring this to a close. We wish you all the best with your upcoming interview, and I'm sure we'll have you on again to talk more about your successes in spreading the Chinese culture.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank
Good
you.
Luck. 祝你好运。
谢谢你。
If you enjoy listening to the China Jedi podcast and want to get involved, either by asking a question, expressing your opinion, good or bad, light or dark, or even appearing as a special guest, then get in touch by emailing our team at info@chinajedi.com. That's info@chinajedi.com.
May the smile be with you.